In the name of Lord Jesus Christ, we will continue studying the book of Ecclesiastes. Let's turn to chapter 5. Chapter 5 from verse 13 to 17. 13 to 17. Let's start from the sister side. Esther, please, can you read for us? Chapter 5, verse 13 to 17. Starting from verse 13. Continue until 17. Okay, in these few verses, the preacher continued to elaborate why toil and accumulation of wealth and a lot of money can be meaningless and chasing after the wind. I think most people in this society really looking up to the people who can earn a lot of money. And actually your value is measured by your annual income, your assets. And that's why in those gossip magazine or Fortune magazine, they always have ranking. So wow, so and so billionaires, they have so much money or their mansions or stuff. But according to the preacher, after has been the richest person in the whole earth for many years, I believe that the moment he died, Solomon was still the richest person in the world. But after he experienced that, he continued to elaborate why wealth is meaningless. Of course, we are not saying that money is useless. Money is very useful. You can buy the stuff you need, you want. However, money after a certain level and amount, then accumulating it or having more doesn't make a lot of differences, right? Of course, when you are very poor or you have no job, you need a job, you have the money, that make you feel good. But after a while, if you keep chasing it, after you have a certain level of money, if you keep chasing it, you may be bringing yourself trouble rather than good. That's why he said in verse 13, some people, especially the wealthy men, they accumulate wealth. However, they harm themselves. Now, that is difficult to comprehend sometimes. Sometimes, in terms of money, the more the better, right? So who would think that more money is no good? But preacher said, actually, more money may not be good because of a several reason. Now, first of all, the reason is verse 14. He said that person can have a lot of money, he can have a son, but actually he has nothing else. What does that mean? Right. What does it really mean? For some rich people, because they are so occupied with their work and business, sometimes even he has a son or a family, but sometimes it's just as if he has no family. There's no life. There's no family life. Because if you keep chasing about money, you'll be busier and busier. And then sometimes your family relationship is not even good. You have a son, but as if you have no son. You have a wife as if you have no wife. You have a family as if you have no family. And especially sometimes if you look at the family of the mega rich people, their family are quite complicated, actually. I've been to California recently, and we went to a burger place. I don't know whether you like it in LA or California. What place is it called? Do you know it's called In-N-Out, right? How many of you really like In-N-Out Burger so much? Is it in the East Coast here? It's got In-N-Out, so you doesn't know what is In-N-Out, right? So basically, it was a family-owned business. I was told it was so successful. The burger is much better than McDonald's. McDonald's is just like trash, right? This time I go to McDonald's a few times, I was so disappointed, right? The burger, you cannot really eat it. You just can give it to your pets, and maybe he'll reject it, right? But In-N-Out Burger is so good. No, so juicy. I'm allowed to talk about food right now, right? Because you're all satisfied. Oh, sorry, some are fasting. So let's don't talk about food. But In-N-Out Burger was very successful and is a big business. But I was told that that company is privately owned, and after the founder is dead or something, and the children or the grandchildren is fighting for the estates with the grandmother who is the founder's wife or something. So that is the saga of just like many rich people family. The children fight for money, even before the parents die or after the parents die. So sometimes because of money, they just go against each other. If you are super rich, your family affair is super difficult to manage. So now verse 15 tells us another problem of having too much money, right? Is actually the fact is money cannot be going down with you when you die. Naked you come and naked you go. It cannot bring anything. Now, brother and sister, you're going to enter society earning money very soon from now or a couple of years later. Or you're already earning money. How much money is in your pocket right now? I guess anyone have more than 100? Or 200, 1,000? I really doubt that you bring 1,000 with you, right? But you have your credit card. But anyway, here the Bible says, you know, naked we come and naked we go. Doesn't matter how much you own this life, but you cannot bring away anything. Why? Because when you come naked. How many of you been to a hospital seeing a... Well, you're too young for that, right? Yeah. But especially brother, in the future you get married, your wife is pregnant, and during the labor, you have to go inside. Right, when my wife delivered, I was told I have to go inside. I said, could I be spared about this? The doctor said, no, you have to go inside. This is Western society, right? During the old days in Asian, you know, husband is not supposed to go inside. They just go outside the way and smoke cigarettes. All right. But in Western, wow, you have to go inside to give support to your wife, right? Cheer, come on. Hold on to it. Yeah. And then, okay, so I went in, put on the gown and all this... look like a doctor. And then I was beside my wife, and after a long ordeal, all the blood's coming out, and wow, I was so scared. So because my wife went through a cesarean section, so the doctor had to cut it and the blood spill out. I only saw part of it, but I was so scared already. I was like fainting and I was not helping at all. So the doctor said, oh, okay, don't stand so near, stand near the wall. So I was standing there, almost fainted. But after a while, I settled myself, and the doctor said, come over again. I was so nervous. Okay, what's now? What's going to happen now? He said, cut the umbilical cord. Wow, I was so scared. They gave me the scissor. I was shaking. That's the first time in my life. I never cut something so bloody. But I have to do it. I pretend to be nothing. Okay, just... And of course, I saw the baby already out, a lot of fluid, very smooth, very watery. And there's nothing. I discovered there's nothing. He's wearing nothing. It's a son. Actually, it's a twin, actually. Two babies, boys. It's twins. And they're wearing nothing. So this is according to the Bible, right? Wow, I bring nothing. Well... I think you never see a baby born and wearing like a fashion or wearing or bringing a coach, a bag, or wearing an Armani suit, right? When a baby came, he's wearing absolutely nothing, just skin. Now, when you die, also you cannot bring anything with you. Of course, at most, you can wear the clothes that your relative give you, they think is your favorite, but absolutely your pocket will have no wallet, right? Even your iPhone cannot go down with you. People will take it, right? Yeah. Anything of value, people will take it away from you. The clothes, nobody want it. Actually, people doesn't want dead people's clothing, right? No relative want to say, oh, my grandfather is dead, let me take his suit. Or let me take his shoes. Nobody want it, right? Usually we bring it to the donation or second-hand shop, right? But you can absolutely bring no wallet with you. You will not bring your money, you will not bring anything. So that's the Bible teaching. Even you are mega rich, you are Bill Gates, right? You are Solomon. After you die, you will not bring anything down in your coffin. Even sometimes in the past, some emperor, when they die, they try to bury a lot of treasures in their super luxury, what do they call? It's not a coffin only, right? It's like a pyramid or something. Like a huge mega graveyard or something. Yeah. But after a while, all the robbers came and took it away. You go to the pyramid nowadays, there's nothing inside, right? So actually the fact that the Bible always reminds us that money is only for use to use this life. Even you accumulate too much, the rest you cannot use, you cannot take it away. So this is an evil. This is a chasing after the wind. If your life is only focused on accumulating more and more money, so what is the point if you cannot bring it away? So he keep repeating this fact and remind us that don't set your heart on more money. Money is, if you think it's enough, if you are settled, your heart is satisfied, it's good. Don't compare with people, right? And then verse 17 saying that some people work so hard, they never enjoy life. How many of you think your parent is working too hard and never know how to enjoy life? Raise your hand. Is that all? Be honest, huh? How many of your parents work like they even though they are not that poor, but they live like a poor man, right? Sometimes, especially we Asian, right? I think most of us are Asian here, right? So Asian work very hard, but sometimes we just don't know how to enjoy life, right? Sometimes people have money, but they still don't want to spend it. They are afraid that, oh, maybe I should save up for the future. And some people really stretch so thin, right? They work so hard and they stretch themselves so thin, and every day they're eating so little. They never go to a nice restaurant, they never go for vacation. They can afford it, but they don't want to spend it, because they want to save up more. So at the end, it's just not a good life they're enjoying. So Solomon has already observed so many people are like that. Now verse 18, then there's the remedy. Underline verse 18 is something positive, right? That's one of the homework that I've given you to mention about what is your portion. We are talking about the first portion of your life. It's chapter 3, verse 22. And then the second portion of your life happens in chapter 5, verse 18 to 20. Chapter 5, verse 18 to 20. Next, please. Sister, who was reading? Candice? Okay, so these two verses underline this is another portion of your life. The first portion yesterday we talked about was you enjoy what you do, right? You have satisfaction from your work. Even though didn't pay you a lot of money, but you really enjoy your work. Or you feel the meaning of helping people in your work. So you'll be very happy, and that is your portion. Now the second portion of our life that's given to us by God under this temporal, empty life, you can still get some meaning out of it, is enjoy what you get from your labor. Underline it and write down in your notes, right? Enjoy what you gain from your labor. Under the sun, you can still have something with meaning, which is enjoy something you can get from your labor. This is very important, because if you earn so much or you work so hard but you never enjoy the fruit of your labor, you are just like wasting your time. You are just like pointless. It's no meaning. Right? Earning money is one thing, but how to spend it wisely with wisdom is even more difficult. So you have to know how to enjoy your labor. But first, let me clarify something, right? Don't just tell your parent after the MYTS, say, you know, Preacher Timothy in the class, he's kind of telling us, no, we have to enjoy life, so don't work too hard. So if you don't want to go to a holiday, bring me the money, I go to the holiday for you. All right? Or you tell your mom, I need to go to Europe, I've never been there. The Bible said you have to enjoy life while you can, right? You never know when you're dying. So you better finance my holiday. Okay, don't say this, right? This is not what I mean. You are misquoting me. Or misquoting the Bible. What does the Bible said? Enjoy what? From your toil, from your labor. The Bible does not say enjoy the toil of your mother or enjoy the labor from your father. Okay? If you want to enjoy life, you labor first. You save up. You work a part-time job. You find a good job in the future, earn your income, and then you travel. Right? Don't tell your mom, I want to go to Europe, you must pay me the ticket. Right? Unless they offer family trip and bring you along, this is another question, right? You do not say to them that, oh, you owe me, I want to enjoy life, you finance my vacation. There's no way like this. If you want to enjoy life, you toil and labor yourself. If you just want to drive a nice car, don't ask for your family for money. Some people, as I mentioned yesterday, right, in some cities, some people, or some immigrants are very rich. Wow, they're zooming in and out with a nice BMW or Benz or even some nice sport car. And they feel they are so different. But this, actually, if you think deeply, they should be ashamed. Why? Because it's not their own money. It's not they are very smart. They work so hard. They save up for the sport car. They use their parents' money for the sport car. So what's the point? What are you boasting? You're nothing. You're only using your parents' money, right? If you want to enjoy life in the future, or even now, you have to ask yourself, do you labor and toil for it? If you are showing off the wealth from your parents, you are nothing, right? If you have a job, you save up, you buy a nice car, there's nothing wrong, because you work for that. So be very sure. If you don't have that kind of ability, then don't pretend you are something. Don't ask your parents to finance all your luxuries. Okay, remember that? If you want a vacation, save up yourself. Don't ask your parents to finance for you. So he said, enjoy life from your labor, from your toil, from your work. Now, suppose that after you graduated, you're working already, or you have a family, you have some budget thing to do. After you get married, you have kids, you have children, but still you have to find time with your wife, with your husband, of your kids, you can enjoy. You know, the Sabbath day is very busy, right? So after a long day of Sabbath, I'll tell my wife, now it's a long day already, don't cook. Am I very considerate, sister? I tell her, don't cook, you know, you've been working, we've been in the church for a whole day serving God, right? So let's go out to eat. I said, wow, sure, I don't want to cook anymore on Saturday, right? I've been cooking for like a whole week. So I bring her along, and then bring my three kids. Just in case you don't know, I have three children. So they are teenage, preteen, and they eat a lot. So I bring them to the restaurant, sit down, order some meal. And that is that moment of the whole week. Now we sit down, eat some nice food, and then we don't have to work. You don't have to cook, and then people serve you once a week. You feel really enjoying. Right, sit together as a family, eat together, a nice meal. Of course, it's not like eating lobster or abalone or something super expensive. Just like fast food or some very economical restaurant. Right. But still feel good because you enjoy your labor. So in the future, brother and sister, I don't think in your generation you have problem of trying to enjoy life. Already, some of you are already enjoying your parents' money. Yeah. So if you are already enjoying too much, you have to scale back. You say, well, okay, we have to wait until when you earn money, then you can start to know how to enjoy life. But in the future, when you work hard, you don't forget to enjoy the fruit of your labor. Right? If you work so hard, you buy a nice watch, you have a nice car, because you work so hard for that, you can go ahead. There's nothing wrong. But don't overdo it, of course, right? Don't overdo it just because you want to show off or something, right? Within a certain means. So this is the portion of your life. You can eat, you can drink from what you labor for. And you can get joy from it. Why? The key point is verse 20. Because God is pleased with you. God answered his prayer. So the true joy is you still have to focus on God. You know that God has blessed your life and you start to enjoy what God has given you. And then your heart feels so joyful because of God. If you enjoy physical things but without God, without thinking about God, you will not be that joyful. But if you have God in your life, you related everything that you do with God, then the meanings come out. Just like when I was sitting with a family to eat, while we say a prayer, sometimes we take turns. I always say, oh, thank God giving me a family. All these nice kids, and now we can eat in a restaurant for once a week. Wow, it's really God's blessing. And I see my children eating like, wow, so hungry and devouring all the food. I say, it's a blessing from God. I feel so happy. You know, everything you enjoy, you think about God, you're happy. In the future, if you can drive a nice car, not because you're smart, right? You can drive a nice car, you think that, oh, you know, God bless me a good job so I can finance my car. Every time you sit in the car, you think about God. Right? And then you are happy. So you related all your physical enjoyment from the toil, and then you from God, your heart feel you are so blessed from God. So that is important. Okay, so that's chapter 5. And of course, chapter 6, he continued to elaborate on this one. Now, how about some rich people, they don't have God, they are not focused on God, what will happen? Chapter 6, verse 1 to 2. Next, 6章1到2节, 读一下, huh? Chapter 6, verse 1 to 2. Now, if you are very rich but you don't live a God-centered life, or you don't even know God, this is what will happen. Somebody he saw under the sun, he has so much riches, he's lacked nothing, but God doesn't allow him to enjoy it. Why? Maybe he didn't have the health to enjoy it, or didn't know he should enjoy it. Or maybe he didn't have a nice family, he can enjoy it. He's so lonely because his family have so much problem, just fighting for his wealth, but never really enjoy a good family relationship. And then he cannot enjoy it, so what's the point? And verse 3 continuously, he talk about, even you have longevity, even you have money, but now you have longevity, you also can be emptiness and vainness. Next, please, verse 3. Next, verse 3. Verse 4. Verse 5. Thank you. So, verse 4, verse 3 and 4 and 5 actually talk about another vanity, is longevity and having a lot of children sometimes can be meaningless if you don't have God. There's another vanity here. Longevity and so many children can be vanity. You're all 20-something, right? How old do you want to live your life? If you have a choice, if you think about this question, you long to be, how long do you want to live? How many of you think 70 is quite okay, you don't want to live too long? 70? Oh. How many of you think at least you want 80? 80, wow, okay, 10 more years. How many of you want 90-something? 90, that's good. Why do you want to live so long? Maybe you have things to do, right? How many of you want 100? 100, wow, what do you want to do with 100 years? That's what the question, right? But some people think the longer the better. Well, it depends, right? If you don't have health, then the longer you live, the more suffering that you have. Secondly, if you don't have a very good family, the longer you live, the lonelier you get. Imagine you're 100 years old, all your friends die already. All your same generation die, your children die, your grandchildren already die. And you are the only one alive because you are so long, longevity, right? Unless you have a lot of support or your great or great-grandchildren or children really close to you, otherwise you're just staying in the elderly home by yourself whole day, right? So longevity is good only when you have health and you have good families. Otherwise, it's just suffering. But this assumption that if a person can live so many days and years and he has 100 sons, but still he can be very empty. He cannot even get a proper burial. He cannot even get a proper burial. So that is evil. That is emptiness. Always you read from the newspaper. In Taiwan, there was a super mega rich person. His name is called Wang Yongqing, right? Have you heard about him? He was like Taiwan, but Taisho, huh? Or something, the kind of big conglomerate empire, business empire boss. After he passed away, I think he passed away when he came to the US business trip or something. He didn't expect that he would die so soon, but he just died. And then people transport him back to Taiwan. And there was some dispute among his children, obviously, about inheritance. So after a long while, he was not given a burial because the offspring were kind of arguing. Of course, eventually he was lucky, right? He got a burial and settled down. Yeah, but that is really reflection of wealth, the influence of family. So some people, they're so rich, but after they die, they cannot even get a proper burial. So what's the point? He said it's worse than somebody who was not even born. So that is his observation. You know, the preacher himself is really observing life, even though he lived in a palace. He lived a very rich life, but he really know life. So brothers and sisters, I want you, from now on, you try to observe life around you. Don't just focus on your video game. Or don't just focus on your Facebook, you know, what other people eat or go to vacation. You try to observe different people, different families, different interaction, inside church, outside church, comparison, okay? And also you even compare family within the church. They're all different. The way they do things are different, but the outcome is also different. You observe different marriages in the church. You observe different children from different families, and then you'll be so wise. You know? Do you want to be wiser, brothers and sisters? Do you want to be wiser? Wisdom comes from God, of course, but also comes from observation. If you know how to observe, you can get wisdom. If you don't observe people. I've been observing you guys since 3 days ago. Observing each and every one of you, even though I don't know your names, all of you, but I've been observing some behavior, yeah, and you're also observing me too, right? And you're also observing each other. By observing, you know deeper. You don't have to say it immediately, but you just keep observing, right? Okay, from the class, I observe some are really paying attention. Some are just okay, just waiting for time to pass. Or you're really tired, you cannot focus. Some are really, really following. Yeah, I know. But of course, God is also observing us. Okay, let's continue. No. So from verse 7 to 12, it's just repeating, everything is empty, and because of people are not content, that's why they are not wise. Verse 7. Next, please. Now, what does vanity come from? Verse 7 tells us, write it down, underline it. Vanity comes from your heart is not content. Where is vanity come from? Vanity doesn't mean that you don't get enough money. Vanities come from your heart is always in discontent. Right? If your heart is not content, no amount can satisfy you. No material can satisfy you. Right? If you're having an iPhone 4, and then you're always, you know, saying that it's slow, it's small screen, it's old style, look at all the people having a 6 already, you know, then you're not happy with all what you have. And of course, your heart feels so empty. But I tell you, even if you have a 6, after a few months, when a, what, 6? 6S plus? 6S? 6 plus S? Or next year, the 7 come out. Well, I always tell people, I'm waiting for the iPhone 8. All right? You can always waiting for something better. But if you are not content with what you have, then your heart is still so empty. Oh. But if you're always satisfied with what you have, your heart is always satisfied. I tell my wife, you are the best wife in the whole universe. And she says, every time I said this to her, she's so happy. I said, you are the best wife, only you are the best one. You're the most beautiful in my eyes. So brother, learn how to say this in the future, okay? If you know how to say stuff like this, you're okay. Right? You always praise your wife. You always compliment her. Even though she's not. But in other people's eyes. In other people's eyes. I haven't finished. Don't laugh yet, right? Even in other people's eyes, she's not the most beautiful. But you tell yourself, the woman you marry is the best one. All right? The woman you choose or the woman God has given you is the best one. It's the most beautiful one. It's the nicest one. Then she is. She will be the best one for you. And your future husband is the same. Don't complain, you know, you're not tall, you know, you're not handsome, or you don't earn enough money. No. Tell yourself the husband God prepared for you is the best. If you believe it is the best, it's the best. If you feel that it's the best, it's the best. But some couple, they always complain, you know, come on, my wife, you know, you are not like other women. Other women are more beautiful. Can you do something? Right? Make up more or what, whatever. So don't complain, right? Feel satisfied with what you have. How about if your parent tell you are not smart as other kids, what will you feel? You don't feel good, right? But if your parents say, I love you, you are my kid, you are the best in my eyes, then you'll be motivated. So be content with what you have. Contentment can only give you satisfaction. Whatever you have, thank God. If you live in a small house, thank God. If a parent don't own a house, they live in a rental apartment, thank God. You can have a place to stay. Doesn't matter. At the end, the value of life doesn't count on this material. If you're born in a poor family, thank God. Because you're born in a poor family, you have to work hard, you mature earlier, you know life earlier. Thank God. Right? Everything you have to thank God and be content. If you can just, if the car that you go is so normal, it's not like a very famous one, right? Thank God you're less stressed, right? You live a normal life, normal person, thank God. Whatever you are, if God created you are not so smart as other people who are studying, well, thank God when I studied I was never so smart. But thank God I was happy, right? Even the university I went, nobody knows it. But thank God I was happy, I was able to get a job after I graduated. So, if those who study so hard in the famous university get a job, I go for a normal university, I get a job, at the end, we're all the same, right? We're all the same. We just live one life. So be happy what you have. Don't compare. Don't compare with other people. So that is the way to you can overcome vanity. If you're not happy, if you're discontent, then the emptiness will be so much that you will not be satisfied. And verse 12, let's read verse 12. Next. Can you read louder for us, please? Verse 12, 6, verse 12. Yes, life is like a shadow. Underline this verse, right? Shadow appears while there is sunshine. But when sunshine was blocked, there's no more shadow. So shadow is very fleeting. It comes and it goes. Right? So life is just like this. Brother, you are young. Sister, you are young right now. But very soon, you'll be like my age. Right? I'm 41 this year. I tell you the secret already. Right? So very soon, you'll be 40s. Can you imagine you're 40-something already? It's hard to imagine, right? And very soon, I'll be 50 or 60. Now, when I was in your age, attending the first MITS, I was 18 years old. Can you believe it? I was so young and full of dreams, energy, no, like a young person. I was 18 years old. In those days, I think 20-some years old, they are old guys. They're old people. But now I'm 41. Still very young compared to elders, of course. But compared to you, I'm no more young. So 18 to 41, already feel like just like that. Right. So very soon you'll be old. Look at your mother when you go home. Look at your father when you go home. Very soon you'll be like them. Right. This is life. But we have God. We have God. If you have faith, you hold it onto God. Even though we age, our life passes so fast, doesn't matter. We have the meaning. You know, in our church, you know, taking group pictures of church event, right? Church event. You know, for Asian people, when they the position of the picture means something, okay? Don't, when you take a group picture, don't be so naive and go to the front and sit in the middle, right? Usually, the front row is reserved to the what? The more front, the more senior, right? And the more middle, the more senior. So we can see at the beginning, you'll be standing like in the mountaintop. Because you were children, right? You're a young worker. But as you age, you're moving up. From the very last row, now become second last row. And then could be coming front and then coming to the middle. Because you're older, life is just like that. Nobody can stop it. But you can use it wisely. You only be young once, okay, brother and sister. You can only be young once, but you can use it these youthful years wisely, serving God. Otherwise, if your youth is wasted in video game or doing nothing, worldly pleasure, the shadow past can never come back. So that's why serving God, fear God, is the most important things. So we have covered chapter 6. Chapter 7, verse 1 to 4. Next. Chapter 7, verse 1 to 4. Now, these four verses, actually, not only these four verses, but chapter 7 is trying to challenge us to think differently. If you want to overcome vanity, you must think differently than the people in this world. If you think like the same with the rest of the people in the world, you'll never transcend vanity. You'll be part of it. You'll be following them. But if you think differently, your value is different, then you can jump out. You can be not under the sun, but you'll be over the sun. You go to the spiritual world. But how can you do that? You must be able to compare. Only when you compare, do some comparison, you can find out which one has bigger value and what is the better options. If you don't compare, then of course you don't know which is better. So in chapter 6, there are a lot of comparison. You can write it down as I said it. Right? There are a lot of comparison. There's a lot of sentence structure. So something is better than something. Because blah, blah, blah. This is a sentence structure. This is a comparison. You have to bring them together to compare and you get something. You can make the wise choice. Okay, the first things, what is being compared? Chapter 7, verse 1. Fame is better than perfume.
This is the first comparison.
Fame is better than perfume. How many of you like putting on perfume, brothers? Hugo Boss? No? Oh, any brother put on perfume? Not so much perfume, right? But put on those the other things.
Okay.
That is part of the perfume too, right? Cheap one. How about sister? How many of you really like perfume? Chanel number 5 or number 4? Is it Chanel number 4 or number 5, number 6? Those are really expensive, right? Perfume is so expensive, a small bottle and costs you a few hundred bucks sometimes. I hate perfume, actually. My wife hates perfume, so I thank her for that. Saved me a lot of money. Sometimes when I sit beside somebody, wow, full of perfume, she's just coughing, and I was just sneezing. But some people like it so much, because perfume sometimes can smell good if you like it. But here is a comparison. Fame is better than perfume. Why? Perfume is smelling good, but it's temporal. First, it's temporal. Make you feel good, make the people smell it feel good, but it's temporal. But fame is, you can say it's long-term and even eternal. If you have good fame, people think about you, for example, if you are so loving. People think, oh, that sister is so loving, always helping people. And that brother, he's so faithful, serving God. People equivalent your name to a good character. That is called your reputation. Your reputation. That is better than perfume. Because perfume, you bought it, it's not difficult to get. You use money, you get it. But the effect is not long-lasting. People won't like you or love you because you wear a Hugo Boss perfume, right? Or a Chanel number 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Right. So, but people will love you because you have good character. You have good character. And if you have long-term having this good character over years, then your reputation will build up. And people will equivalent your names with a certain kind of character. Now, brother and sister, be honest to yourself. Do you know your reputation? You don't know, then you better check with other people indirectly. Or kind of, yeah. Well, don't ask the person beside you, right? They cannot just tell you the honest. You feel bad. Reputation always come back to you indirectly. So ask yourself, what kind of reputation do you have? What character will people relate to your name? Some people, when you mention a name, they say, oh, that guy, I know him. So irresponsible. That guy is only a talker. He knows how to talk, but never do something. That sister, I know her, is so material. Oh, that sister also she likes to gossip a lot, right? Those are negative reputation. You know it or not, sometimes though reputation is already behind your back, just like you're wearing a very bad perfume. You have to shake it out, it's not easy. You take a 10 shower, sometimes you cannot shake it out. Sometimes I put on a sample, right? I go out with my wife and then body shop, and I'm, oh, I want to try this on. Wow, one drop of perfume or something, keep you the whole day smelling. So shaking off the bad reputation is not easy. But you can work hard on that. Over time, you can change your reputation. So please ask yourself, ask your friend, ask your family, ask your parents indirectly, what is my reputation right now? If it's something not so good, you better work on that. Because in the future, brothers and sisters, if you come to your matchmaker like Preacher Raymond, Pastor Raymond, or any MC, matchmaker, oh, Preacher Raymond, please help me the matchmaking. And then he will say, brother, your reputation is very bad, do you know? Hold your ass, I cannot find you anybody. Or sister, you call to a matchmaker and say, oh no, preacher, pastor, can you help us? Oh, okay, I'll try, people say. But that means your reputation already ruined. So for a sister, of course, brother also, your reputation is your life. If you don't have good reputation, not only marriage, but anything else, you will not be going smooth. Even in your workplace, in a certain industry, you know, you work on a company, if you perform very well, you're very faithful, you're capable, you're responsible. Your reputation just spread out the whole industry. Even your country, your company closed down, right? You lose your job, other people will just come for you. Say, hey, your company closed down, come to my place to work. You don't even have to ask. People come for you. Why? Good reputation. So that's better. Reputation better than perfume. Don't just think how to polish your resume or have a nice hairstyle or buy nice clothes to attract people. Your reputation is your life. Better than perfume. So this is the first comparison. Second comparison, in verse 1, the day of a man's death is better than the days of his life, when he's living. How many of you like birthday party? You still having, how many of you still having birthday party by your mom and dad? You request that. How many of you still having birthday party every year? Cut your cakes or something? No? It's okay, raise your hand, be honest. I like honest people, right? Okay, some of you, right? My kids, they always ask for a birthday cake. We all like to celebrate birthday. So last week was my youngest son's birthday, July 16. I was not home, they were in Vancouver, and I saw the pictures. Wow, I saw the cake, it's so nice. It's a cake, the shape of minions? Minions? Banana, something. Because we just went to Universal Studios for our family trips, and he, my youngest son, loved Minions so much. So he requested the birthday cake must be Minions, right? And a few years ago, we had one Hello Kitty cake. And anyway, I shouldn't talk too much about cake, right? But people like to celebrate birthday, right? Because when a day somebody was born is so joyful. It's a celebration of life, of hope, of future. But the Bible said, compared to birthday, there's something more better, much better, and more meaningful. What is the day? The day of your death. Well, that's hard to understand, right? You shouldn't go to somebody's funeral and say, let's celebrate. if you do this, people will hate you, right? But the fact is, spiritually speaking, the day of your death is more important than the day you were born. Why? Because the day when you were born, you just begin. There's nothing to celebrate. Actually, you should be sad sometime because you were born in this sinful world, labor and toil waiting for you, right? You have to study so hard, and then you go to college, to get a job, get a family, get a few kids to burden you, and then save up for retirement, and then you get old, get sick, and then you're going to die. So if you think like this, there's nothing very much to be celebrated. If you're lucky, you survive all this, and you can survive the spiritual journey, and then you can go to heaven. Well, the day of your death is the conclusion of your life. See whether you can go to heaven or not. So that day is more important than the day you were born. Because right now, we are still not sure we can go to heaven yet, to be honest. Because you're still living. If tomorrow you decided, I want to leave TJC, or next month you decide I want to give up, I want to go to live a sinful life, go ahead. But you bear the responsibility. You lose your salvation. But only until you die, if you keep your faith until you die, the coffin closed, the nail is, or the screw, nowadays they don't use nail. Huh? They use the, do you see funeral nowadays, the nice coffin, they have a key. When you close the, finally people, they will cry or they'll say goodbye, and then the funeral director will close it and then use the key, right, to lock the coffin. That's the conclusion of your life. And then whether you can be saved, whether you can go to heaven, eternal life, or you go to hell waiting for fire, depends on that day. So the preacher compare, actually it's birthday, not much to be celebrated. But the day if you die, better celebration, because it's conclude where you can go. And verse 2, he compare, this related theme, right? Going to the house of mourning is better than the going to the house of the feast. How many of you enjoy going to a wedding banquet? Really enjoy. Why? Why do you enjoy, Mike? What are you enjoying?
expensive food. Very honest, I like it too. When I was a young kid, I looking forward to the wedding banquet. Because I can eat whatever I want, I can drink whatever pop I can drink. You're not restricted on that night, right? It's a banquet, you can eat nice food, abalone, lobster, roasted pig. And of course, when you grow older, when the wedding, you see nice, beautiful bride there, and then handsome bridegroom. It's a happy day, right? Or happy birthday party that you can enjoy. But if you compare, going to funeral is much better. How many of you enjoy going to funeral? How many of you enjoy going to funeral? Not much, right? Not many. Usually people don't enjoy going to funeral. But here's that funeral has more meaning than going to the house of the feast. Because there's the, here's that this is the common destiny of all. Sooner or later, people go to your funeral. Right? It's a matter of time. It's a matter of when. It's not a matter of whether it will happen or not. It's a matter of when. It's a matter of when. So those who are living, underline this verse, very important. Those who are living, even though you're a young man, young woman, the book of Ecclesiastes were written to young people. Were not written to old people, okay? Let's make it clear. I didn't mention it yesterday or the introduction. The book of Ecclesiastes was written to young people, and Solomon, in his old age, he tell young people, everyday think about funeral. That's strange, right? But only when you think of a funeral, you think that how life actually will end up. And if you really understand the meaning, then you really prepare for that eternity. Last year in Toronto, where I come from, I conducted 3 funerals in my local church. At the same time, I also conduct 3 weddings in the same local church. So that was the busiest year. 3 weddings, 3 funerals. Of course, the wedding was a happy event, but I like the funeral better. According to the Bible, right, you're supposed to like funeral better. Because the funeral I attended, one is from an elder who was 102 years old. He worked for God faithfully his whole life. He was a part-time preacher in Taiwan. After retired, moved to Canada to continue to work for God. 102 years old. Even before his death, 1 year, 2 years before his death, he's still going to church, taking notes during the sermon, wearing a hearing aid. Even when I was visiting him in his old age home, when he was so sick, he's still asking, how's the church work? How's my family? How's my father? Right? He's still caring for people. After he left, after he died, people miss him so much. Another brother, funeral was our 76 years old brother. Also very faithful brother in church. He never got married. He has no family. But every week he just come to church and observe the Sabbath faithfully. So I miss them, to be honest. Yeah. And when I conduct the funeral, in my heart I was thinking, if one day after I die, the church conduct funeral for me, and saying that, wow, thank God we can learn from this old man, this old brother, because he never left the church the day, even until the day he died, then I'll be so blessed. All right. Think about what will people say in your funeral. If people were to ask to write something about you in the funeral, what would they write down? Would they write down, well, the brother have not much achievement, but his whole life was devoted to video game. He was so successful in playing video game, but at the end, he has nothing. Right? Is this what you want people to remember you? Or if people can write, that's brother or that sister, even though worldly speaking, he was not like a super rich or super successful, but his whole life was serving God, or her whole life was devoted to her family, raising a Christian children, and will be remembered by God. So how will you want your obituary or people writing your funeral depends on what you live today, what kind of lifestyle. So waste no more time. Think about your future. So, eventually, if you always think about the end of life, even though you are a little bit sad, but actually eventually you'll be happy. Verse 4, the wise of the heart is in the home of the morning. The heart of the fool, if it's the happy, the house of the feast. So in university, I'm sure many young people like partying. How many of your friends are really like a party animal or something? They always partying. If you enjoy partying so much, according to the Bible, you're still a heart of the fool. But if you like going to a cemetery, take a walk. How many of you enjoy taking a walk in the cemetery? You don't have to go at night, okay? You don't have to go after dark. Daytime is all right. Near Calgary Prayer House, there was a cemetery. Sometimes when I was working there, daytime I had nothing to do. I like to go for exercise. I always go to that cemetery, take a walk. Alone, by myself. Of course, I only go during the daytime. So I was walking and I saw different gravestones, all the mark, the names, the years. Some of them, the husband and the wife buried together, right? Same plot. Some are young children, some are middle-aged men, some are huge, big, kind of a tombstone, graveyard. You can see, but all sleeping under my feet. And that is the common destiny. Sooner or later, our dust return to dust. Think about that, and then you'll know how to live your life. So chapter 7, verse 5. Chapter 7, verse 5, and 5 to 7. Next, please. Chapter 7, verse 5 to 7. Okay, here continue, we have see some comparison. The words of the rebuke of the wise is better than the song of the fools. Nobody like to be rebuked. Sometimes your mother says something to you, you just hate it, right? So annoying, why you keep bugging me? And saying the same thing the past 20 years. Nobody like to be rebuked. We all like to listen to pop song, right? Oh, or the rap song, or Taylor Swift, or all the pop song. But according to the Bible, the rebuke from the wise is better than the song of the fools. You listen to all those worldly songs, doesn't bring you any good. But if you listen to somebody who is wise to rebuke you, saying that you're in trouble, you have to change, right? And then you actually used to cherish it. So this is a comparison of value of what you hear. Verse 8. Let's turn to verse 8. Next, please.
Verse 8.
Now, once again, there are two comparisons here. The end of a thing is better than beginning. What does it mean? Beginning is important, but the end is even more important. You were born into the TJC. You were given a privilege. You have the Holy Spirit when you were very young. It's a good beginning. But that doesn't guarantee a success until you can hold it to the end. 50 years later, if you're living long enough, right? 50 years later, if the church celebration of Senior Day, Senior Appreciation Day, 50 years, how old will you be? Add yourself, your age now, 50 years. Huh? How old will you be 50 years? 76. Oh, Samuel will be 76. So old, right? 70 only. Don't overvalue your age. How about Sister Candace? 50 years later, how old will you be? 70. Okay. So 50 years later, if we are all alive, if we're still alive, you'll be very old senior. So on that day, you're taking a Senior Day appreciation picture. You're still sitting in the front with your can, walking, people holding you. It's good. Thank God. It's still in the church. Oh, and people holding your funeral, saying good things about you, this is your end. So the end is better than the beginning. Now you have a good beginning, but keep up the word. Keep up the faith. So verse 9, verse 10, just keep telling us that we have to focus on that area. So, just a recap of what we have learned today, you know, this, you have to observe and compare value, and you have to make your own decision. What lifestyle, what kind of choice that you made to make your life not empty, right? So let's end our class tonight. Let's pray in silence.